catch up with us.
Our next speaker is Merle Vigil, EONR and the Delta Yield Concept for Dryland Wheat.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, David Poss and David Nielsen, Jay Goose. The first two fellows have helped me collect the data there at Akron, and Jay Goose's data is published data that I'm including in the study, in the presentation. Can you hear me okay back there? A little bit? Speak a little closer to the mic, maybe. Okay, so a little bit of background on the location. The Central Great Plains region is what we have outlined in yellow there. The station is represented by that red dot right there. It's about 100 miles east of Fort Collins and about 100 miles northeast of Denver. The region gets about 350 millimeters on the westmost edge, increasing to about 560 millimeters on the eastmost edge. It's a large region, about 23 million hectares. That's more agricultural acreage than all of California. About 40% of that, 46% of that is cultivated dry land, primarily wheat-based semi-arid dry land production systems. There are 4 million hectares of irrigated land, which is declining, and we have about a balance of 9 million hectares of rangeland, which reminds me to tell you that there's actually more beef than there are people. If you look at the population centers along the Front Range there, include Cheyenne, Wyoming, Laramie, go to Denver, Colorado Springs, all the way down through Fort Collins and so on. We only have about 5.8 million people, but there are 8 million beef. And so there's always going to be a market for feed grains, which is a great thing. If you're a dry land producer, you're always going to have a market for those feed grains. And so we spend a lot of our time on wheat-based production systems, including feed grains. This is a typical wheat yield response graph. We've got on the vertical axis here, let's see if I can get my mouse here. We've got wheat grain yields increasing on the vertical axis there. Keep in mind that about 15 bushels is equivalent to 1 megagram per hectare, or 1,000 kilograms per hectare. So about 2 megagrams down here at the bottom, and about 60 there. 60 bushel ends up being about 4 megagrams per hectare. The take-home message from this graph is that it's really weather that drives wheat yields in that part of the world. We can see a wheat yield response there in a wet, cool year that's really, really responsive to nitrogen. However, in a dry year, you don't get much response at all. And if you look at the zero N rate yields, we're seeing a doubling just due to weather. However, even in our most responsive wheat yield, that first increment of fertilizer is only giving us about a 30% increase in wheat yield. So weather trumps nitrogen every time. When we're trying to make some sense out of that data, we can use an old trick here. If we got 4 years of data, it works pretty well to calculate relative yield, where you take the yield of any given nitrogen rate in a given year, divide by the maximum yield, multiply times 100, and you can pull those data together nicely. Okay, but that's 4 years of data. It works nice in a 4 year data set. Try to do that with a lot of years of data, and it doesn't work too well. But you can put that to, you know, calculate net returns, and then optimize that to do some calculus there and come up with economic nitrogen required at various costs of nitrogen at various wheat prices, with the end goal of looking at a table that looks like this, where we've got optimum nitrogen rates for wheat based on 50-cent nitrogen or $1.10 per kilogram. We've got various wheat prices across the top here and various yield ranges, 1 megagram per hectare down to 4 megagrams per hectare. And the take-home message is that this works nicely when you got a small data set, and it predicts that, you know, you're not going to need a lot of nitrogen when wheat prices are low and yields are low. But this is really the reality, okay? When you get a bunch of data together, you actually have some years where your highest yield is at your zero N rate. Now, that happens to be in a drought year, and you might be able to fit relative yield to maybe some of these equations here and perhaps another one up here. But when you try to do that for a large data set, it just falls apart. And so I got interested in this concept here. This is something that Gary Kachanowski published back in 2009, Canadian Journal of Soil Science, where he developed a relationship called the Delta Yield Concept, where you take the economic optimum nitrogen rate from the zero hand rate yield, and you have to use the quadratic equation, which means you can't use some of the other methods of getting to economic optimum nitrogen rate, but it works out really slick. This is the equation that he derived, and I'm not going to try to derive that here. If you want to find out about that, you can read that paper, but it's really a simple fit between the quadratic slope and the linear slope. So if you look down at this parameter right here, this is just basically the quadratic slope and a no-intercept fit between the quadratic slope and the linear slope. And the only other parameter that's in that equation is the cost ratio, nitrogen cost to grain cost. And so you've got those two parameters in that equation, and it works out pretty slick. So I'm going to show you some corn data first. We had 10 site years, standard replicated four-rep experiments, randomized complete block designs, N rates from 0 to 134 kilograms per hectare in those various trials, measured grain yield, pre-plant residual nitrogen, primarily focused on in the top 60 centimeters of the soil profile, fitted quadratic equations, and then applied Gary's method of summarizing those data. And lo and behold, it does fit all on one line. So it's pretty slick there. So what we have vertical axis is the economic nitrogen required, ranging from about 0 to about 150 kilograms per hectare. And across the bottom, we've got the delta yield, which is the increase in yield due to that economic optimum nitrogen rate. But then when you start looking at that data and start thinking about it, that 1999 year I've circled there, recommending 150 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare on dryland corn, how often does that year occur? And it turns out that year we had 6 inches of rain in August and about 3 inches of rain in July. Typically, August rainfall is about 2 inches. And so, the probability of that year happening was about less than 1%. So what this kind of prompted me to think about the other probabilities, and so I went down there and started assigning probabilities, and it turns out the higher probability of occurring are those low N rate equations. And this is only 10 years of data, so I don't want to make too much of this corn data. I have more data to look at for corn, and I really wanted to focus on wheat because I have a lot of data for wheat. There's 30 equations that we used out of 43 site years of at looking at this, and 16 were from collected there at Akron, and 14 for published work of Jay Goose's back in the early 70s or late 70s, early 80s. N rates from 0 to 101 kilograms per hectare, standard randomized complete block for replications. Equations include residual nitrate in the top 60 centimeters. I'm not completely sold on that. I'd like to do some more analysis with just the top 30 centimeters, but this is where we've started so far. Residual nitrates ranged from 22 to 81 kilograms per hectare in those soils pre-plant. And this is what the typical quadratic fits look like. I've got one flag down there on the bottom showing you this one here is one of those years where you get a drought year where the highest yield was at the zero N rate. And the ones right here in the center, let's see, one year of data collected on the station. These were both about a half a mile apart on the station. Similar intercept terms, but very different linear slopes. Just showing you that there's a lot of variability in this kind of data, and you got to have a lot of data to begin to understand how this works. The idea of collective intelligence. Bill Ron talked about there is no such thing as a static N rate. It's just not going to happen. So you got to have lots of data to try to understand how to interpret this kind of stuff. And then I needed to show you this. This is the probability of receiving a given amount of precipitation during the growing season. That first graph there, that first line, the light blue line, is the growing season precipitation from September 10th to June 20th. And the next line is growing season precipitation plus what you might expect from 30% fallow storage. And if you look down here at the bottom of this probability distribution, these high rainfall, high moisture situations happen less than 20% of the time. And so response functions that are generated are collected during these years are useful. It's useful information, but they don't happen that often. And so the response functions that are more in this range, say 50% and up, are probably more useful to producers. So here's our wheat data. And again, that it fits nicely on that line. But you can see that the probability of getting those high end recommendations of around 100 to 130 kilograms per hectare have a low probability of occurring. And it isn't until we get to about right here and down that we see equations that are probably more meaningful. So I haven't quite completely figured out how to use this yet, but that information does tell us something about that some of these fits are very valuable and some of them are not very valuable at all. And that's all I have. I've got to summarize here. Residual nitrate in the top 60 centimeters of these profiles for the wheat were between 22 and 81 kilograms per hectare. And from that kind of residual nitrate, we were able to come up with economic optimum nitrogen rates anywhere between 0 and 130 kilograms per hectare. The average was about 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The EONR, the economic optimum nitrogen required, is linked to the probability of receiving a given amount of precipitation in a given year. It tends to decline with drier years. And the delta yield concept is a nice way of summarizing lots of equations. You can get it all to fit on a single line. It gives you a way of thinking about the data. What does it really mean? And that's all I have. Yes. Thank you. I haven't done that calculation, no. But I did something like that with triticale, and it turns out if you get the right recommendation the right year, it is very important. I see what you're saying, but no, I haven't done that calculation for how many acres like that. Yes.
Yeah, Earl, have you thought about perhaps developing a function into which a producer could decide on their own probability that they're willing to accept and say between 50% probability or 75% whatever, and then get a predicted optimum end rate, letting a producer decide his own level of rate?
That's really kind of the next step. And it's really hard to predict what kind of rainfall you're going to get during the season, but you can look at pre-plant water. And I've done some of that, and I'm still playing with that, but I was able to, you know, when you kind of go on a witch hunt, right, where you do all kinds of subset regression, and it looks like you can predict, there is some ability to predict what the potential for the economic optimum nitrogen rate is going to be based on pre-plant available water. So what's stored. So we know that. I mean, a farmer, if he keeps good records, he can know, and if we know something about his practices, if he's a, you know, no-till using stripper headers, we can say that he's probably going to get about 30% storage. So that's kind of the next step. Yes.
These soils were basically all silt loam soils in eastern Colorado.
Didn't really look at trying to separate out sandy soils versus silt loams. Yes. Yeah, that is a good question. The question was,
thank you.
The question was, are farmers looking at, do most farmers put on their fertilizer pre-plant, and are they looking at putting the fertilizer on, say, when the wheat begins to break dormancy in March? And we've played with that a little bit. Some years you get a response if it's really a wet year and you get lots of wet weather. But when you look at all the data over lots of years, that pre-plant application is pretty safe way to do things. It's just so dry that we don't. So. Yes.
Just one comment. Those of you that followed the stock market crash last night, it's up 180 points.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked at my fertilizer stocks this morning.
Yes.
Just a comment, Ron. I mean, I think this is fascinating. I think something that people outside our region don't understand is our potential for nitrogen loss once it's in the soil is so low. I look at it from a different situation. It kind of ties into Nathan's comment, too. To me, the right question is, how much profile nitrate should we carry year over year to make sure we don't leave yield on the table? That it's not for us, it's a long-term decision. It's not about finding the economic optimum for this year based on probability. I think this is good stuff, but to me, the bigger question is, how much should we be carrying in the profile to make sure we don't miss out on a crop like this year? But I think this can help inform that.
Good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.